This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As the NCAA basketball tournament continues this week, it overlaps with the Jewish holiday of Passover, which begins this Saturday. The University of Illinois is out of this year's tournament, but one of the team's all-time greats, Deion Thomas, found a special connection to Judaism while playing professionally in Israel. During his four-year career with the Fighting Illini from 1990 to 94, he became the all-time leading scorer with 2,129 points, a record that stands today. After college, he was drafted 28th overall by the Dallas Mavericks before taking his career overseas to Spain and eventually to Israel. That's where he found a second home, winning three Israeli League basketball titles, becoming an Israeli citizen, and starting a family. Today, you might recognize Deion as a men's basketball radio analyst for the Fighting Illini Sports Network and as a studio analyst for the Big Ten Network. He's also Associate Director of Development for University of Illinois Athletics. Joining us now to discuss March Madness, basketball, and his unique journey on and off the court is former star Illini basketball player Deion Thomas. Hello, Deion. Welcome to the 21st.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation. Our lines are open for your calls at 800-222-9455. If you have questions or comments about the NCAA tournament or the Fighting Illini's season, or any questions for Deion Thomas about his life on and off the court, give us a call. The number again, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. Deion, we're going to get into your story and your career, but of course, I think we have to start with the Illini men's basketball team of 2021. You did a virtual March Madness event last week that was sponsored by the Jewish National Fund USA, and they asked for your tournament prediction for the Illini. You said in your heart of hearts you thought they'd make it to the championship game, beat Gonzaga. Unfortunately, they fell well short of that goal. So what went wrong in their upset loss to Loyola on Sunday?
They ran into a very good Loyola team. No, but
that was easy. Okay.
Yeah, I really thought this team, not thought, and I still think to this day, this team had the makeup to win a national championship. And this is, you know, possibly one of the best teams, if not the best team that we've had in the orange and blue. But this is the joy of sport, but it's also the heartbreaker of sport, because it only takes one loss. And if you get that one loss at the wrong time, which is what took place here recently in Indianapolis to a very good, as I mentioned, Loyola team, Porter Mosier and I won't say we're friends, but we have a great relationship. I have nothing but respect for him and what he's done during his time at Loyola. But I'll say this, I still believe we should have won that game. But Loyola was a better team that night, and they deserve every bit of the accolades that they have going forward, because they are a good team and they played really well. But so we ended up having to bow out early, but it was still a very successful season in my eyes. Of course, did not end the way Illini Nation would want it to, but they won a share of the Big Ten title, the Big Ten tournament champions. And they had a very good year, turning it around from a 21 loss season, which was the most ever in the history of the University of Illinois, to winning 27 games this year. So you have to take your hat off to them. A very successful season, just didn't end quite the way everyone wanted it to.
Do you can you root for Loyola now, or do your U of I allegiances prevent that for the rest of the tournament?
I'm from Chicago.
Yeah. Okay.
So I actually posted that in one of my tweets before we lost. And I said, I always root for Chicago teams. And the comment was, but I can't do it today. And that was the day that we played and unfortunately lost. But no, I'll definitely cheer for Loyola moving forward. I'm one of these guys that I'm always a homer. And home is Chicago as well. So if it was DePaul, if it was UIC, any of the Chicago teams that were going up against Illinois, then I'm not rooting for you that day. But other than that, I'm definitely rooting for Chicago.
Okay. And you're in Chicago now. You also grew up in Chicago on the west side, close to the U of I Chicago. Can you talk about what was your life like growing up there?
Well, you know, I'll start it off by saying this: you never know how poor you are until you're around people that aren't. So
Yeah.
I was a good childhood. Even though my mother raised us alone, of course we had the help of my grandparents who lived close by our neighborhood. Everything was basically within walking distance to get to my grandparents' house. So my childhood was a happy one. We always had family, friends around, but as I said, you don't realize the things that you're missing until you actually realize that they're missing. So when everyone in your community is living the same way you are, things don't look as bleak, but they were. I mean, there were times when, you know, we had to skip meals. There were times when, you know, you had to choose, as my grandmother used to say, you had to steal from Peter to pay Paul. So you had to decide whether you're going to have the lights on one day or the phone on one month, you know. So there were those difficulties, but as a young person, I did not understand them and didn't realize them. And my mother and my grandmothers did all they could to make myself and my brother's childhoods a happy one. And they did a heck of a job at it.
We need to take a break in about a minute and a half here. Did you feel safe growing up? What was that aspect of life like?
Oh, that aspect of life, you know, if you got a minute, we're going to take longer than a minute.
Yeah.
Because that aspect of life was very difficult. I mean, and you had to pay attention and be on guard at all time, which is really, you know, very stressful. And that's what it was. But as a kid, you know, again, you don't realize the things that you are going through at that time. But now as an adult, I can look back on it and say, no, what did not feel safe all the time. I mean, in my house, we had to sit on the floor normally when we were watching television, especially in the evening. You couldn't sit on the couch because my mother and my grandparents were afraid of bullets Wow. coming through the windows. So we had to sit down. That way, you know, you have a brick, you know, kind of protecting you from the structure of the house. And, you know, and there were always the constant fights and growing up, but, you know, kids fight, I think. But we really had to be careful where we would go, what we would do, what neighborhoods, how you would wear your clothes, you know, what color clothes you were wearing, depending on where you were living. Those things did not seem crazy at the time. But now here I am sitting with you at 50 years old, and I look back and I know how crazy they were. Well, even before then, by the time I got to high school, I could realize how difficult things were for my family, as well as how crazy things were in my neighborhood.
Yeah. All right. We're going to continue this conversation after a break. We're going to talk more about some of your youth experiences growing up, interactions with police, and where your career in life took you after Chicago. Listeners, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with former U of I Fighting Illini star basketball player Deion Thomas. He's the school's all-time leading scorer on the men's side. We're talking about the NCAA tournament and the men's team, and also his unique post-collegiate career. If you want to join our conversation, 800-222-9455 is the number. Phone lines are open again, 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with former U of I Fighting Illini great basketball player Deion Thomas. He's the school's all-time leading scorer on the men's side. And if you want to join our conversation, the number to call is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Deion, before the break, we were talking about you growing up on the west side of Chicago, what life was like then. Last week, you were featured in an article in Forbes. It was called Illinois' Deion Thomas Builds Bridges Between Minority Communities During NCAA Tournament. And the piece begins with an experience you shared of the first time you were discriminated against by police on the basis of the color of your skin. Can you share that story with us?
Sure, sure. I mean, it's... And this was my first experience, but I remember sitting on my grandmother's porch with my friend Walter Robinson, was his name. This is my next door neighbor, so it was my best friend. And we're sitting on the porch, he and I, just really hanging out. And it was one of those hot summer days, of course, when it feels like it's about 1,000 degrees. And so we could hear the police sirens on the street. So, you know, of course, you know something was wrong. So you're looking around, but we just continued to sit there because we were, you know, we hadn't been doing anything. So the police come to a screeching halt in front of my house, and they called my buddy and I off of the stairs and made us lie down on the ground. And, you know, we're laying face down on the ground, and, you know, the ground's extremely hot because it was a hot day, and not really telling us why, but really just, you know, berating us with language and various things. And then my grandmother came out of the house. My grandmother at this time was in her late 50s, early 60s. And what she was asking, and I'm sorry, this still kind of flusters me, but she's asking him what's going on, you know, trying to explain to them that, you know, we're just sitting on the porch, we haven't been doing anything. And the way they spoke to my grandmother, which was extremely disrespectful. And eventually, I couldn't tell you how long it was, but it seemed like forever that we were laying on this hot pavement, but they let us up. And their excuse was, well, we were looking for someone and you fit the description. No apologies, no anything, you know, and they hop in their car and they drive off. So, I mean, I don't know. Those are tough things. And unfortunately, you know, they're still happening today. And here I was around 9 to 10 years old when this took place. I was taller than most kids at that time. And maybe that's why they thought we were older. But I still don't believe that that gives any credence to, you know, just pulling up on someone. My front door was open. So it wasn't as if we were. The door was closed and we could be acting as if we were sitting there. The front door is open, and then definitely not to speak to my grandmother in the tone and in the manner that they did.
And yet I've read that your father and brother were police officers. I wonder if you can talk about that dynamic and how that, you know, maybe complicates or affects your, you know, view of racial justice and policing and everything else that's been so at the top of the American conversation in the past year.
Sure. Let me explain to my father. My father was actually my stepfather. He and my mother got married when I was 11, 12 years old. But he's the only man that, you know, I would call or consider my father because of all he did, not just for me, but for my younger brother. But he was a police officer. And at that time, he was a sergeant in the Chicago Police Department. And my younger brother, who, you know, was a great athlete, but always wanted to be in law enforcement. So he didn't go to college. He ended up going to the Marines instead and came back and started working for the Department of Corrections. And then eventually joined the police force for Northern Illinois and then eventually at UIC. Where they have the same, if I'm not mistaken, he would say that they had the same kind of the same power as state police. They were, even though they were university police. So the thought that my community doesn't have respect for the police is totally off base, I believe, especially for my generation. And I believe the one afterwards, we were always taught on how to deal with the police or how to get along or relate to the police if you were stopped. You know, my mother said we had to have the conversation at a very early age because it was myself and I had an older brother and then, of course, my younger brother. So we had to talk a long time ago on how to deal with it, how to deal with and relate to police officers, where you basically have to subdue yourself, be subservient in a way. So you can avoid some of the issues that we're seeing today. So, you know, that dynamic of eventually my brother going on to be a police officer as well as my dad, it's always been, I guess I could say a bit confusing, not for me, but I can see where it can be confusing for this younger generation that's that's really into their personal space and the things that are going on. I don't know if very many of the mothers are like mine that were having those conversations back then on how to deal with, how to relate to police officers. But what happened to me, unfortunately, I had seen happen in my neighborhood hundreds of times. It wasn't the last time that it happened to me. So it definitely created a thought process on what the police are doing, how they abuse their powers. And that's not just, unfortunately, you know, Caucasian police officers. This also happens with Black police officers. And so not as often, I will say that, but it does happen. And that's where the confusion come in, that because these are the people that are supposed to be protecting you. And my younger brother and I have had some of these conversations because he patrolled actually over here in the neighborhood where we grew up. But he also had to battle with seeing people through one sphere instead of, you know, and I'm not trying to make an excuse for the police, but I know their jobs are hard and they're very difficult and they have to be on guard at all times, but you can't treat everyone as if they're a criminal because not everyone is. And I think this is where we tend to lose ourselves or them lose themselves at times and start to put people in the same box. And that's a problem.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Deion Thomas. He's one of the all-time great Illini players and all-time leading scorer for the team. We talked earlier about the ignominious end, I guess we could say, to the Illinois basketball team this year. And I want to talk now about your professional career. You went overseas to play basketball professionally, and including Israel, and you really found a home playing there. Can you talk about your connection to Israel and then to Judaism?
Sure. It's a proud topic of mine, to be honest. A lot of people always ask, why did I not stay in the NBA? And part of that, I have to go back to my days of growing up on the West Side. My grandmother would often tell me, you know, you're bigger than the village, which is the area where we live. They called it the village. And she was like, you're bigger than the village, you know, that you don't have to be here. You don't have to stay here. Think big, think wide. So when I started playing basketball at Simeon my senior year, my team, Simeon High School, as well as the Marshall girls basketball team, we were able to take a trip together to Amsterdam, where we stayed and we played basketball against various teams over there for 2 weeks. And that really opened my eyes, not just to the ability to be able to travel throughout the world, but how beautiful Europe was, how the treatment by its citizens was different than what we got here. And just all of those fundamental differences between Europe and the United States, and I found them fascinating. So when I got drafted, I was actually in the 11th hour of signing my contract with the Dallas Mavericks. And my then agent called and was like, hey, I got another offer just came in and I just wanted to make sure that you had it before you made your final decision. So it was to go and play in Spain. And I called Jimmy Collins, who was my assistant coach at Illinois, who had recruited me throughout the recruiting process when I was in high school. And we had a long, deliberate conversation about playing in Europe or playing in the NBA, the pluses and minuses. And the last thing, two of the last things he told me is, one, the NBA will always be there. It's not going anywhere. So if I wanted to take this early portion of my career and see what else is out there, then I should keep an open mind on that. And then the last thing he said to me was, you know, it's all about being able to do what you want to do when your career is over and not working a job that you have to do. And so I took his words very close and I examined them and I looked at the contracts, looked at the opportunities. So my idea was actually to go to Spain, play that 1 year, and then return to the NBA. And it just so happened that in 1995 is when the NBA went on strike. So there was a player strike and lockout. Mm. So I went back to Spain. And that was the year that I met my wife for the first time. We weren't married at that time, but that was my second year we met. And to be honest, I just didn't have very much interest in coming back after that. I mean, I would have come back if someone would have come up with an offer better than what I had, or the situation was better than what I was in. But I was in a great situation living in Spain. I had come to really embrace and love the Spanish culture. Yeah. And as well as the food and the people and everything that was going on there.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. I want to say we only have about 3 minutes left. And I do want to ask you, because you have two daughters who were bat mitzvahed in Israel and
yes.
They're multiracial, part Jewish. I wonder if you can just talk a little bit about, you know, how that story all comes together for you.
Oh, sure. And I'm sorry, I can get a little long-winded.
People expect that.
Exactly. So once my wife and I got married, of course, as you mentioned, both of my daughters were, one was born in Spain, my oldest, and the youngest was born in Israel. They were both bat mitzvah there. And when I met my wife and we got married in the beginning, that's when I started to learn about Judaism. I started to learn about the culture and learn about the history. And I mean, we would always do the various holidays in the house where we could do the prayers. And then now that we were living there in Israel with the family, then it became even more enlightening to me that the religion was not just about rituals. It was about family. It was about community. It was about pulling everyone together and pulling in the same direction. And that was always one of those things that that felt right to me. And so I've actually been practicing now for, we've been married 22 years, so it's been close to 20 years now. We're getting ready for Pesach. We're trying to decide where we're going to go or what we're going to do for the Passover holiday. But it's just been an eye-opening experience for me. And as you mentioned, the interview last week, I just really want to continue to do the best that I can to open the eyes of people in my community and around this country and around the world, if possible, about all of the pluses that have come from Israel and from the Jewish community, as well as from the Black community, and then make sure that we continue to foster and build those bridges between the two communities, because they've always been hand in hand when it's come to the struggle, because of our shared past, because of our shared enslavement. And there's just a lot of things that have, I believe, connected this community. And this has just been the right thing and have been a passion for me ever since.
Deon Thomas is one of the all-time leading greats from the U of I men's basketball program. If you want to learn more about his experience in Israel, his connection to Judaism, we're going to put a link to that interview we were talking about with the Jewish National Fund virtual event. We'll have that on our website at 21stshow.org. Deon Thomas, it was great speaking with you today. Thanks so much for being here.
All right. It's truly my pleasure, and thank you for having me. And I will now find and like the 21st, because I am a big NPR fan. So now I have to make sure I find your program.
Subscribe to our podcast, as we say, and happy Passover, happy festival to you. That is it for our program today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. We will talk to you again tomorrow.